Thanks, guys. Sure. Already the Lord is speaking through the worship. And this is a wonderful time of the year. Just as Christmas dawns on us, often we celebrate Easter and what the Lord has done for us and died on a cross and given us salvation and a sure foundation. But this is a key time of the year where we can actually take time off and just reflect. And I just want to just from last week, Ross was sharing just how we need to spend time with the Lord at this time. And we don't want to get caught up in the freneticness of life and the world and everything that it throws at us, that this is a time to reflect. This is a time to position ourselves to receive from the Lord. This is a time where we can actually spend time with Him and be refreshed. But I also just wanted to just add an extra to that, to maybe just balance that a little bit. Also, what wasn't seen strongly enough is that you also need to have fun. You also need to have good family times, and let's just keep it in balance with spending time with the Lord and being refreshed, but also just go on leave, go to the beach, braai, have fun, get in each other's homes, enjoy your family, don't eat too much. Yeah, sure. And have you ever wondered when you watch worship DVDs or even watch the worship team and they've got all these like cymbals, Logan's busy with cymbals behind his bum here, conducting the musicians here, and we as preachers have the same cymbals, and David will love this. Please just give me the 10-minute landing time, the 5-minute, let's land this thing now, or like kind of then this sign here. Means you overshot the runway. So, David, feel free to just give me a couple signs. And if you see the preacher suddenly, you're like, oh, my hat, go from somewhere to a quick finish, a quick landing. If you've ever been on a plane and suddenly you need to land and it happens fast, that's what happens to us as well. So I titled the preach this morning, In It for the Long Haul. And I know that a lot of us have tough times. A lot of us this year, if you had to reflect, I just did it the other day. I just thought, wow, what is the last 365 days actually had in it? And I was surprised to find out how much it had in it and what had taken place and things that you had to persevere through and push through and endure and challenges that have come across our path. And for each and every one of you, I'm sure you can sit in your chair now and go, wow, I don't know, this year just feels like a good year, but it feels like a tough year. There's been lots of things that are happening. There's been deaths in people's families. There's been financial challenges. There's been marriage challenges. There's been all sorts of challenges. And I don't know what that challenge is for you. Everybody's got a different challenge. And we might find that our circumstances are tough. But what I want to present to you today and what I want to encourage you, that even when it is tough, that we actually firmly keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and we actually build into His kingdom. Sometimes we can get caught up in the stuff that we're dealing with. It might be months, it might be years that we've been facing the giants in our life, facing the challenges or battling to overcome the things that have really just held us back. And what I want to challenge us today as well, apart from just presenting to you that there is a hope in our Lord Jesus Christ, and I'm going to speak on faith. I'm going to speak on the Hebrews faith today and trust in the Lord and keeping your eyes firmly fixed on Him in all our circumstances, but that there's a balance between building kingdom and actually understanding what He's done for us in the salvation call. There's an expectation from the Lord that we will actually build His kingdom, but there's also promises that He will sustain you. He will give you grace, that in your tough times, He will be with you. And if nothing else, the fact that He died on a cross and that He gave you life and He gave you a sure and secure foundation for life, that if that's all you ever had in life, that should be enough. But the fact that He does choose to bless us from time to time, sometimes it's easy, sometimes we have tough times. But if all that you ever had was your salvation, that should be sufficient. Also remind you that we're in a marathon and not a sprint. We're not in the 100-meter dash. I don't know if anybody's familiar or watches athletics. I was going to bring a video clip, but then I thought maybe just for time's sake, let's leave it out. I don't know if anybody knows what a steeple race is, a steeplechase race. 3,000 meters, grueling, running around a track, jumping over these look like massive hurdles. They are not the normal hurdle that you see in hurdle races. And there's water troughs on the other side, and these hurdles are tall, they're big, and they're solid. And sometimes life is like that. There's hurdles in our way. There's things that we need to clear to be able to move forward. And it's more important how we finish the race than how we start it. And I think for any pastor in many churches, we see a lot of people come into the life of the church, commit their life, have a salvation moment, or enjoy the Lord's presence, be empowered by His Spirit, just real manifestations of the Spirit in their life. And then the sad thing for us sometimes is that 2, 3, 4 months down the line, suddenly you don't see those people anymore, or they're not as committed, or they're not pushing into the church, pushing into the fellowship, and actually wanting to build the kingdom. It's almost like something went wrong. They had a momentary wonderful experience in the Lord, and then when they get back to reality and they get back to life, sometimes life's a little bit tough. Our problems are still there. Reality and the challenges of life are still to be faced. So we need to make sure that we have a good perspective when we are facing the challenges and the tough times in life. Life's challenges will always be there, but we need to focus on the main thing, and that is building God's kingdom. So I'm going to be looking at a passage. I'm going to break it down into bits and pieces from Hebrews 11 and Hebrews 12. And we all know that Hebrews 11 is a long chapter. So I'm just going to take an excerpt out the beginning of it and then one towards the end. It is the great chapter on faith. And in Hebrews 12, as we all remember, that's almost like a picture of an amphitheater or a big stadium. And those previous giants of the faith, those people who have died but have led a faithful life, they are cheering us on. So they're taking a stand and they say, go, you can make it. You can do it. Kheru, you can do it. Sizwe, you can do it. There we go. Kheru's in the back there. You can do it, Kheru, you can do it. And just cheering us on in the walk that we need to go and endure. So I just want to make a statement that there's a lot happening here in Mossel Bay. There's a lot happening in this community, and there's going to be a lot happening next year. It's going to be a bumper year as we're just extending the Lord's kingdom. And it's exciting times, but we're actually going to need to make an impact in this area. We're going to need people who serve, people who are committed, and people who understand the concept of faith, and people who are able to take a balance between just being able to serve and build His kingdom, but having one eye on heaven and one eye on knowing that our problems are not as big as we sometimes see them. So we need a healthy injection of Hebrews 11. And I'm just going to read the first 6 verses of Hebrews 11 just to set the stage. If we can have that up, Nadine. Okay, it says, now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. This is what the ancients, that's the guys in Hebrews 12, were commended for. By faith, we understand that the universe was formed at God's command so that what is seen was not made out of what was visible. By faith, Abel offered God a better sacrifice than Cain did. By faith, he was commended as a righteous man when God spoke well of his offerings. And by faith, he still speaks even though he is dead. By faith, Enoch was taken from this life so that he did not experience death. He could not be found because God had taken him away. For before he was taken, he was commended as one who pleased God. And without faith, this is key, it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to Him must believe that He exists and that He rewards those who earnestly seek Him. So I just want to highlight verse 1, that faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. So I want to liken it unto like a birthday. We all have birthday, or Christmas time is a good time to be getting gifts. So every birthday, every Christmas, we can be reasonably certain that we are going to get a gift. I hope that we can be certain. We mostly get gifts at our birthday and Christmas time. But somehow, some of what we open will be a surprise. So there's a combination between assurance and anticipation. And that's very, very similar to faith. Our conviction is based on our past experiences. So we are convicted that the promises will take place. What the promises look like and how they unfold is the mystery and is sometimes a surprise. But what we can be assured of is that we have been given faith. And faith can best be described as sure and certain. And the beginning point of faith is understanding God's character. It is who He says He is. So we need to understand, in order to understand faith, the beginning point is understanding who He is and what His character is. And the end point is actually believing in His promises. He will do what he says he will do. So truth faith is when we believe that he'll fulfill the promises that he's given to us, even though they have not yet materialized yet, even though they have not yet taken place. And we all have circumstances when we know that we've been promised things. And sometimes the fruition or when it takes place can take quite a while. And I know you won't mind me sharing it, but even for Aiden, I know I've been here for nearly six years. And all of that time that I've known Aiden, there was a call in his life to be an elder in Mossel Bay Church and for him to be planted firmly and grow and help us build Mossel Bay. But there were challenges that came, and there was at times working three jobs till 12 at night. There was sometimes retrenchments, Petrus A, and you know, his own business, and having to make changes, but having to stand on the promise that God had given him. And there were prophetic words that accompanied that, and sometimes things looked bleak, and sometimes he even questioned and even looked beyond the borders of Mossel Bay and said, should I get a job elsewhere? Should I go to Durban? Should I find a job looking after golf courses in Durban? But God actually had spoken promises over his life and had actually said, no, I want you here. And the promises now are coming to realization and materialized now, and now he's living in the calling that God wanted him to be part of. So it's a settled confidence that things that have not yet been promised will come to pass. And his promises have proven true from generation to generation. You can go back and you can read the Bible, and it's good to read the Bible because then you see and you take it in. There was something that was, I didn't get to listen to it, but my wife was playing it in the car. There was something put on the Elders Forum this week about just the amount of time in the Word, and just if you read it once a week, it would have almost minimal impact, correct me if I'm wrong, Ems, and twice a week, it was kind of barely touching sides, but when you got to around about four times a week, it had a massive impact. There was suddenly a whole shift around, and as a freebie, I'm just throwing in that if we spend time in the Word, we'll see what his promises are for our life. We will understand generation upon generation. He is faithful. He's the same God today, tomorrow, and in the future, and he will hold true to his promises, and he will bring them to fruition in his timing, and we need to have faith that he will do that. So what does that mean for you and me? And how should we live our day-to-day journey of Christianity? First of all, and I said earlier, that he has secured salvation for us. And he has secured just a wonderful, he died for us. He gave us life. He gave us life in abundance. And that is important. And that is the starting point. But that doesn't stop there. It's not like, as Borne would often explain, it's not our fire insurance. It's not our ticket to heaven. It's not a 100-meter sprint where we actually just like salvation and boom, we're in heaven. And sometimes it's a journey. It's a marathon. It's a steeple race where there's going to be challenges and there's going to be the knocks of life as we go along. But he expects us to lead committed lives, to serve him, to build his kingdom. And that means committed to him in a personal relationship through reading the Word, getting to know him, spending time in his presence. It means committing to one and each and every one of us so that we can actually build family together and build something of unity that we spoke about this morning. And also, thirdly, it speaks of being committed to building the kingdom together. There is a vast kingdom that needs to be built as we live in this region and this geographical area. We want to take ground. We want to take our inheritance. There's been things promised over this church that we are going to start to see and start to live in the next year or three. So we need to know that things were promised 5 years ago, 10 years ago, how long? Often 15 years ago, there were things promised that we're living in now. But if we hadn't known that God has promised, but the promises are certain and they will come to be, we might have been disillusioned, discouraged, disappointed, and we might lose our way. So I want to say that sometimes it's easy just to fall into a trap of, I want to term it, casual Christians or casual Christianity. And that is sometimes we come for the goosebumps, we come for the manifestation of the Spirit, and that's all important. And we come, the worship's great, church is almost fellowship, it's fun, it's a happy place. But there's more to it than that. There's a calling. There's a calling to build the kingdom while we've got one eye on heaven, that we can actually build his kingdom here in Mossel Bay. And I just want to read in Hebrews 11, verse 32 to 40, the second part of that chapter. There were some guys who had glimpses of things that would encourage them, that would motivate them to move forward, that they didn't live in all the promises of God. They saw it in part, but they knew that one day they would be together in eternity and there would be a glorious inheritance. But there were other guys. And we start at verse 32. What more should I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, that one, David, Samuel, and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword. Those weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again. Others, the others, they're not named, they're just others, unremarkable people, just others, were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. These were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. So what he's saying in the beginning of Hebrews, the chapter on faith, is that there are some, many, Abraham, Noah, David, we can name a whole list. There's a long chapter. They actually saw in part. They actually knew God's promises. They were certain of a glorious end, of a glorious inheritance in him. There were others who had little hope. They had been through tortured, sawn in two, you name all the glorious stuff that happened there. Not very glorious, heart-wrenching, difficult stuff and circumstances. And I want to say today that even some of the stuff that we face is nowhere near as bad as the stuff that they were facing. But they were there. It is written down in Hebrews that even though they faced grave circumstances and even though life was tough, they persevered. They did not deny Christ ever. They persevered to the end, and they would have a glorious resurrection, a better resurrection, and they would be together with those who did see in part. So I want to say, just in contrast to the Hebrews' faith and the people who are just holding on to the promises, sometimes doctrines creep into the church which actually are not helpful for us. And a couple of those doctrines that kind of almost go counter to sticking it out there, steadfast, enduring, persevering in the faith when things are tough is, firstly, sometimes there's a healing theory that goes around. There's this kingdom now mentality where healing, yes, we want the Lord to heal. We believe he does, and he's sovereign, and sometimes he does, and sometimes he doesn't. And we will always pray, you know, we always pray that the Lord will come in and heal. And I've lost two friends in the last 13 months. Sophie, John's wife, and another friend of ours from Point High School, 17-year-old girl, to cancer. We know that we prayed, and Andres Louis was there, and MC was there, and we prayed, and sometimes the Lord just decided that it was better to take those people because he wanted to be with them. And what I've seen in those circumstances often is that the Lord had a better plan, that even the young girl who passed away, whose mom is just come alive in the Lord now. She is just serving him, and just it needed to kickstart and ignite something in her life. She's passionately serving him, preaching the gospel in her workplace, and excited. And her other young sister has just recently, in the last few months, come to just experience some of the Lord as well. And so sometimes there's a reason why we don't get a quick fix, or the Lord doesn't choose to heal us at that time. And the other doctrine that's not helpful is often cheap grace. You won't have a tough life. It's going to be all happy, blessed. I'm entitled to just a happy life where I'm just going to experience the Lord. It's going to be easy. There's no challenges. And that's sometimes the gospel that we buy into. The gospel that gets presented is one of, like, you're just entitled to have a happy, blessed me. And there's nothing that you need to do in return. And you don't need to worry about building kingdom or anything that the Lord expects. So sometimes these doctrines don't make sense when life comes and knocks at your door. And the reality of life and the challenges of life and the knocks of life come. Sometimes Christians actually wobble a little bit because the two don't add up together. There's almost like a, well, I was promised one particular type of gospel, but now when things are coming against me and things are challenges and tough, it doesn't line up, and that's when we often fade away or we get disillusioned or disappointed and we actually walk away from fellowship or walk away from the Lord or stop building his kingdom over these matters that come because the gospel that was sold to you was not the truth. So I just want to just lay in, moving on to second, I want to just, there are six enemies to perseverance. And I want to just briefly go through them. The first one, we'll entitle the PJ syndrome. Nice word. And it stands for Peter John syndrome. So we'll see in John 21. I'm just going to read verse 21 to 22 and explain what happened just before then. But it said, when Peter saw him, he asked, Lord, what about him? Jesus answered, if I want him to remain alive until I return, what is that to you? You must follow me. Now, what had taken place just before that Peter was told by Jesus that life is going to be, he's going to have a tough life. And eventually, out of shame, he was crucified upside down on a cross. And that life would be tough. And the circumstances that he would face would not be the same as other people. So he basically turned around and said to the Lord, well, what about him? What about John? How is he going to die? And Jesus actually said to him, it's got nothing to do with you. You follow me the way I've told you to follow me, and please don't compare. So what are we talking about? We're talking about comparison. And we're always going to find somebody amongst us, if we look around, that's seemingly having a better deal than you. It's going awesome in their finances, or their marriage, or their kids, and they just had the most blessed, awesome family. They tithe, and it just goes crazy. The stuff comes in, the business is blessed, they are blessed. You tithe for the first time in a while, and the washing machine breaks, the car breaks, the dog gets run over. Linky, are you here? No, not sorry. Things happen, and then we suddenly want to let that comparison creep into our heart and go, well, he's always got it right, or his life is cushy. You don't understand my life. The minute we start comparing, we suddenly get disappointed, disillusioned, and we start to get a little bit disappointed with the Lord as well, because why is his life or her life so good? And what about me, who's been wrestling with my problems for the last 3 months, 3 years, or whatever it might be? So if we compare, we're in big trouble at the end of the day. Secondly, offense. We all know that. It gets preached many, many times, but we get offended quickly, and we get offended with leaders, we get offended with one another, we might be offended with the church, you might be offended with us, we might not preach the way you want us to preach, or the worship's different, you might have been hurt by another church, you might be disappointed, you might be offended with other leaders, and sure, I mean, I can tell a story. I've been in a congregation before where I was offended, and I did get offended, and it took me a long time to get over it, and to cut a long story short, I was leading a congregation, and then I wasn't. That's the short story, short version. No, it was, it sounded rather dramatic. But yeah, there were just things that took place, and I really just handed over the congregation in a wonderful way, and we're good friends, so don't worry. But things took place, and decisions got made, and it wasn't even my fault, but seemingly things happened, and things weren't going that great, and 1, 2, 3, you get sidelined or replaced by somebody who's possibly going to save it, rescue it, and take it onto glory. But that can create offense, and it did. And I had to guard my heart, and even the person taking over, who's a fantastic person, Russell Fraser, who's one of the directing elders, nicer guy you have not met, and just get alongside him and tuck in and just lift him up and get underneath him and support him and just have the right attitude in terms of the right perspective of what's needed to be. So we can get offended quickly. And I want to say one thing. If you've been offended or you hurt by another church, sometimes I'm like talking to people and I go, well, when did this take place? Or, well, it was about 9 years ago or 13 years ago. Guys, sort it out quickly. I want to say that if you've been hurt by a previous church,
get your heart sorted out quickly. Come and talk to us. Come and talk to one of the leaders. Get before the Lord and get it settled. Get it sorted out. If you've been hurt for more than a month or three, we're in trouble. If you hurt for 9 years or 13 years, guys, we need to get over it. And then there's instant gratification. How am I doing, David? No signals from you yet. Oh, okay. He's too scared to signal now. Okay, instant gratification. Basically, I want it all and I want it now. We know that. So the expectation is on God to perform for us. And if he delays, then we get upset. We get disappointed. We withdraw. And human beings are funny things. Sometimes if we don't get what we want, we actually get quite upset and we just find ourselves drifting and fading away and not as committed as we used to be. And then we're not as committed to church. We're not as committed to home group. We kind of like we had an expectation and now we're disappointed. And we need to get over those things as well. Like a classic example is Daniel in the lion's den. Yes, there was an expectation, burning furnace, three of you going in. Tough times. There was an expectation, Lord, you need to come through now and instantly. But what he did say is, even if you don't, I will still serve you. As for me, my family, whoever it might be, even if you do not come through, I know the lion's den is a dramatic example, but in our circumstances, on our day-to-day walk, Lord, please come through. But if you don't, I will still serve you, and I will still have faith in you, and I will still trust you. And then the fourth one, as we mentioned briefly earlier, is cheap grace. The gospel you were sold is one of having a happy, blessed life. He must come through for me, and I don't have to do much. I'm just here. You need to bless me. You need to make sure that things are running smoothly, that life is good. I have a nice house, two cars, two kids, two cats, and life's good. And I feel blessed. Good children, good schools, one wife. It's enough. Trust me, it's enough. For all those young married couples. So we said that it's not a quick 100-meter sprint. We're not just jumping in, boom, we're in heaven now. Sometimes life is a journey. It's a marathon. It's a steeple race. And then the fifth thing is contract faith. We're nearly there. If God does it, if God comes through, I'll do. If he doesn't, I'm out of here. I'm going to fade. I'm not. It's a contract. We hold God to ransom. We want, otherwise we're not going to move. So if he does, we do. If he doesn't do, we don't do. And it does happen so that we do these things. So we need to just be aware of that. And the last one, and possibly the most important one that we've heard most often, is hope deferred. In Proverbs 13, verses 12, it won't be on the board. It said, hope deferred makes the heart grow sick, but a longing fulfilled is a tree of life. So as I said earlier, firstly, if all that you can look forward to is more of the same of what you're currently in, then I can understand that your heart will grow sick. I can understand your disappointment. So if that's all that you can look for going forward is more of what you've got on your plate at the moment, then we can quickly get sick and become disappointed. But a better perspective to take, as I mentioned earlier, is if nothing ever changed, if my circumstances didn't change, the mere fact that I'm loved by a living God, that he saved me, and that he looks after me, and he's got a glorious future for me, and he's got an inheritance for me, that is enough. And any blessings that we receive, any good times that we receive, any easy times, is actually a bonus. But ultimately, he has saved us, and we are going to a glorious inheritance. So what holds us all in tension? And that is Hebrews 12, verses 1 to 3. Let's read it together. We're nearly there. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders, and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and the perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him You endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. In your struggle against sin, you have not yet resisted to the point of shedding blood. So what are we saying? We're saying keep your eyes on Jesus. At this time of the year, keep your eyes on Jesus. The beginning of next year, there's lots that needs to happen in terms of building his kingdom. We need a committed and we need a serving body, and we need you to keep your eyes fixed on Jesus. I'm not sure if it's Greek or Hebrew. Not important, but there's that terminology that has been mentioned a couple times. It's called hupomane. And basically it means, I think MCU, I think you know that word quite well. It's the ability to stand up under a weight, the ability to be steady and stand up under something that's pressing and weighty. It's holding on. It's I never slow down, and I never give up, but I keep on enduring with steady determination to the end. We said it's a marathon. It needs to be steady determination, and we don't give up. We don't buckle under the pressure. We don't buckle under the weight. It's hupomane, standing up, pressing on, steady determination. It's not a romantic thing. It's a gutsy thing. It's no theology, the Red Bull theology, where grow wings, bypass our challenges of life. It's not the Red Bull theology, but it's a gutsy thing. It's Jesus died on a cross for us. He never bypassed the cross. And we can overcome the enemy. Sometimes the enemy just goes, boo, and we're like, oh. But we've given the power to overcome the enemy. He says, greater is he that is in me than he that is in the world. So with hupomane, we've been given the power to overcome the enemy. So we need to hang in there with steady determination. So in conclusion, well, so that faith and suffering are not always synonymous or compatible. Some guys had evidence and motivation and breakthrough to persevere in the beginning of Hebrews to the end. Other guys had very little to work with, very little hope. Their friends were being sawn into. They were having tough times. They were living as aliens. They were living in caves. Things were tough times. My timing's good. Thanks for timing, David. There we go. See, 32 minutes. That's not bad. So that's the guys that were determined to finish strong. The guys that had an inheritance, a glorious inheritance, that they'd share with the guys that had seen some breakthrough, that had died before they'd seen all the promises fulfilled. But they were joined by those who saw very little, whose circumstances were dire. And I want to challenge us today as well to say, like, what is your circumstance? What are you facing at the moment? And I think we need a right perspective. We need to have an attitude that to push through, to be steady, to be determined, to plod on in faith that the promises that were given to us will come to fruition. They will come to us in the end. And even if life is tough, even if your circumstances carry on for another 3 months or 3 years, you have already been given a secure foundation and a secure salvation in him, which is all important. So I want you, as I read just a commentary or just a translation of a nicer translation of what we just read there, you can close your eyes. I'm just going to read Hebrews 12, verse 1 to 4, but just explaining it, and I'll pray for us. And I want to encourage you as I pray, just if you feel that you need to respond, if you need to just come before the Lord as we worship just now, and just ask for his forgiveness, or maybe your eyes are been realigned on him, and maybe you've got fresh hope to go into the holiday season. Maybe you need to dig a little bit deeper. Maybe you need to change your perspective or your attitude. Maybe one of those six things that we mentioned earlier on you struggle with, or you've experienced, or you've fallen into the trap of. And we're going to pray for you just now. We're going to invite you as we worship just now just to come forward, and you can spend time with the Lord. You can just allow him to just massage his love into you again, and just realign you, and just come close to you this morning. We've had wonderful worship where the Lord is saying he's good, he's trustworthy, his promises are there for us, and he's faithful, and we can be faithful to the end as well. So close your eyes. This is basically a great crowd of witnesses of those described in Hebrews 11. Their faithfulness is a constant encouragement to us. We do not struggle alone, and nor are we the first to do so. Others have run race and won their witness. Example stirs us to win also.
So others have run the race before us. Others have had similar problems. But the encouragement is that they have overcome, and so can we. The Christian life involves hard work. It requires us to give up whatever endangers our relationship with God. We must run patiently, and with the power of the Holy Spirit, we must struggle against sin. To live effectively, we must keep our eyes on Jesus. We will stumble if we look away from Him and look at our circumstances. We should be running for Christ and not our souls, and we must always keep Him in sight. When we face suffering and discouragement, it's easy to lose sight of the big picture, but many have already made it through life enduring far more difficult circumstances. Suffering is the training ground for Christian maturity. It develops our patience and makes our final victory sweet. Yeah, Lord, this morning we come before you, and Father, sometimes we just lose sight of you. We take our eyes off you. Yeah, you're the price. And Father, despite our circumstances, and Father God, I pray that even though sometimes it seems like hard work, that Father, you'll protect our relationship with you. That Father, you'll come alongside us and guide us and comfort us and encourage us. And that Father, we will just commit ourselves afresh just to building your kingdom. Just as we just remain in you and we keep our eyes on you, Father, that we will just look around us and above our circumstances and beyond our circumstances and just build into your kingdom.